Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, along with Ted Ross. And Ted, I know you've got teenagers in your house, and I think today's program will be especially encouraging to you because our guest today is going to help us navigate a brave new world.
That sounds good. I'll take all the help I can get. I need it, actually.
And he's going to actually make a reference to Disney. I think you've been there.
Oh, yeah. Right? I love Space Mountain there. That'll be fun.
Today on Connecting Faith, we're going to talk about marching off the map. The guest that we have on has been our guest in the past, and we've so enjoyed the conversation with him. Tim Elmore, Dr. Tim Elmore, is president of Growing Leaders, is a best-selling author and international speaker who uses his expertise on Generation Y and Z to equip educators, coaches, leaders, parents, and other adults to impart practical life and leadership skills to young adults that will help them navigate through life. In fact, the subtitle of his new book, Marching Off the Map, is Inspire Students to Navigate a Brand New World. And it is no question about that we're in a brand new world, whether we want to admit it or not. Those of us that aren't in the Generation Z, we probably don't even know what Generation Z is. So we want to dive right in and find out about all that. Tim, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Thank you, Neil. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
So this is an opportunity for us to realize that the world of tomorrow, even the world of today, is not the same as it was when we were growing up. And you describe the journey into the future, something like Disney's Space Mountain. Let's start there. How are they the same?
Yeah, well, I use that metaphor because you just heard me, I chuckle when I think about this. If you've ever been on Disney's Space Mountain, you know it's a wild ride. There's twists and turns. You're going up and down, and you can't see a thing in front of you because it's pitch dark. And in so many ways, not in every way, but in so many ways, as we move into the future with components like technology, artificial intelligence, we're just a little bit like on a ride where we're going up and down and twisting and turning, and we can't see way into the future. So we're only hoping that we can hang on and get our kids ready for that future. So the book really is about how do we march into new territory, preparing them perhaps for a job that doesn't even exist today.
Well, we maybe need to go back and review because your previous book was about the IY generation, and we're talking Generation Y and Z, and some of us don't even know what those letters mean. So let's define, who are we talking about?
Okay, so we've been talking about the millennials, or Generation Y, for 15 years now. Neil Howe and William Strauss did a landmark book in the year 2000, introducing us to these millennials. They've been commonly, Neil, interchanged with the term Generation Y, following Generation X. Now Generation Z is on the scene, and they've been called a number of different names. But Generation Z are the youngest population being measured today. They would be high schoolers and younger, so elementary, middle school, high school kids. And because they're so young, we're just now able to get a read on the data that kind of mark their mindset and what were the realities they grew up with. Well, most kids today in middle school or high school don't remember a day without social media. They learn about the September 11th terrorist attacks as history. I mean, that's just crazy. It's like JFK's assassination or something, you know? So we're trying to help adults get a handle on this new zany world that these kids are growing up in, that they sometimes we just throw our hands up in the air and say, I'll just never get this. But we have to. We owe it to them to lead them into the future.
Well, and their behaviors are changing as well, right? I mean, kids today aren't the same as when we were kids.
No, absolutely not. And part of the reason is social media. I think everybody listening would agree social media has done some wonderful things for the human population. We can get in touch with old friends. We can give to charities that we believe in. But at the same time, if you track the research, Neil, on the rising level of anxiety and depression in teens today, it directly parallels the rise of social media. So they're consuming 10,000 messages a day, And pardon me, but I don't think we need 10,000 messages a day. So, you know, we're just in an angst-filled world. Middle school kids are worried about the future. My goodness, when I was in middle school, my biggest worries were, where's my baseball mitt and how do I find a girlfriend, you know? So it is a different world, and I think that's cliche. We all kind of know it is, but I really, in this book, try to help an adult really lead a child into a world where we just can't see too far ahead, but we know it's going to be different.
Hence the title, Marching Off the Maps, because as you say, the old maps aren't going to work anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you might remember, Neil, in the opening illustration, or one of the early illustrations, I talk about the inspiration for the title. I actually got it from Alexander the Great centuries ago. He was known as this amazing conqueror who assembled three armies and marched across the known world, conquering every bit of territory along the way. But he didn't stop there. He continued to march into lands that they had no maps for. And he was known to frustrate some of his soldiers by turning them into map makers. And so can you imagine? But isn't this a great metaphor? We are now marching in territory. I don't have a map for this, you know. My own parents could not teach me how to raise a child with a portable device in their hand. They never raised a child with a – so here I am today making it up as I go with my wife and our own two kids. And or if I'm a teacher or an employer and I've got young people, I feel like I'm making up as I go. But that's exactly how Alexander the Great must have felt as he said, we got to draw new maps. We're in brand new territory.
Which I guess begs the question then, what do we need to be equipped to we're not all map makers, we're not all, you know, soldiers.
Yeah, yeah.
How is the next generation maybe equipped to handle this new world, which we haven't fully defined yet?
Yeah, so here's my answer. This is you just asked a very complex question, but let me try to give you a sound bite. Part of the answer is I won't know. I turn 58 years old next month, so I won't know exactly 20 years down the road what my children as parents themselves are going to need. But I can know some things. I believe we as adults need to work to be both timely and timeless. So the timely part is I do need to stay current as much as I can on the changes that the world is going through, how our culture is shifting. I need to know what's going on. I don't need to buy into everything, but I need to know exactly what's going on. But then what I have to offer to these kids today are the timeless skills and virtues and values that you and I both believe there are some timeless ones. I'll give you a good example. I was in front of university students just last week, and I said to them, as an employer, I will always hire an honest employee over a dishonest one, every time. I'll always hire a disciplined employee over an undisciplined one. So you get that. But we need to know what are those handful of virtues that we would say, I don't care if you're living the year 2050, you're going to need these. A boss is going to need these. A spouse is going to need these. Your children are going to need these. So timely and timeless are the words that in one particular chapter I really zero in on, trying to help the reader understand what can they add to the equation of a young person today growing up in this very, very different world.
We're talking about the book Marching Off the Map with Dr. Tim Elmore, who's a best-selling author and a speaker, and he's president of Growing Leaders. And their focus is on helping us as adults, particularly to impart some practical life and leadership skills to young adults. But it seems like as you sort of look at the generation, we talk about Generation X and Y, now Z, that there's been a lot of moments, sort of maybe actions, reactions. Is that kind of typical from one generation to the next that, you know, this generation was all about, achievement. This generation is skeptical. Or is that typical?
Yeah, it is, at least the last century. As I track the data, you know, human history, years and years and years, I mean, millenniums ago, not a whole lot changed. You know, there were traditions and customs that were perpetuated century after century. But clearly over the last 100 years, with change and innovation and technology being introduced to new generations as they came along, we have gone through rapid change. So I have come to believe that every new generation breaks with a previous generation. There is a reaction. So Generation Y might say, well, Gen X, you were cool, but we're cooler. You know, you wear Gap jeans, but I wear Lucky Brand jeans or Abercrombie & Fitch jeans or whatever. But then they correct two generations ahead, Neil. So they might look at their parents and say, well, I love my mom, but I will never do that with my children. So they, you know, try to correct what they see is going on in the establishment. And then I believe every new generation replaces three generations before them. So this is why retro is in. So we look at our grandparents' generation, which is dying off, and they go, oh, my gosh, OMG, I need to, you know, replace some of that. So there's a breaking, there's a correcting, and there is a replacing in every new generation that comes along. And you and I did that, you know, and even unwittingly. We didn't even know we were doing it, but we had our own style, and we're going to be the hip, new, you know, adults that understand these things and talk to our children and become BFFs, you know, to them. So I think it's happening today, and I think we as the mentors need to know exactly what's going on in that sense and then offer what they lack.
And, of course, I guess that's the rub, isn't it? Because we look at them and say, well, you know, I know it works. I have life experience. You don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can see where this is going, and it's not going to end anywhere good.
Yeah, yeah. That's true, and that's where the timeless stuff comes in. So we need to say, sweetheart, I've got some timeless things I promise you your boss is going to look for. But if you don't mind, let me just interject something that might be helpful for listeners.
Yeah.
Angela Ahrens is a great case study of a leader who had young employees working for her years ago at Burberry, this fine trench coat company in London. And when she came in to become the CEO of Burberry, Angela found that the brand was really declining. I mean, young people especially weren't buying coats. So she sat down with her youngest team members and she said, what do you think we need to do to reach your people, you know, your generation? And they came up with lots of ideas, but one of the ideas they came up with was the art of the trench. They said, let us put a page on our website that allows our customers to post pictures of themselves on our website. So who doesn't like a selfie, you know? So they posted pictures of themselves. Well, sales started climbing among 20-somethings and 30-somethings. So Angela Ahrens actually turned wisdom on its ear. Usually the boss says, I'm going to meet with my executives, all these old folks, and then we're going to tell the interns what to do, you know? Well, she said, I'm going to sit down with the interns and listen to these 20-somethings, and then we, the older establishment, who have the contacts and the budget, are going to know, you know, who to turn to make this happen. So I guess I just want to caution, instead of just getting mad and saying, well, these kids don't understand, you know, work ethic today, maybe they don't. We need to teach them. But we also need to be listening and saying, what do you intuitively sense is coming that we can capitalize on to make the world better? So that's what I argue for in the book as well.
The book we're referencing is called Marching Off the Map. The subtitle is Inspire Students to Navigate a Brand New World, written by Tim Elmore. Dr. Tim Elmore is president of Growing Leaders. He's a best-selling author, an international speaker, and we're learning more about how we can be better parents, better mentors, better educators. In fact, we're going to come back and talk a bit more about education and some of the challenges there as well. In the moments ahead, you're listening to Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and my guest today is Dr. Tim Elmore. Tim has written a number of books, and the latest is called Marching Off the Map, and the subtitle is called Inspire Students to Navigate a Brand New World. And we're learning more about the world of tomorrow when we maybe can't even understand today's. But so how do we navigate through life? We need to inspire and encourage today's generation with some practical life and leadership skills. How does that happen? Well, Dr. Tim Elmore is president of Growing Leaders. That's the organization that he's focused on working through and helping us develop some of those things. And Tim, I guess you talk about being pioneers. That we need pioneers, even though maybe it's more comfortable to be settlers.
Yeah, yeah. I talk in the book about being a pioneer or a settler, and I think usually in our mindsets, anyway, we tend to fall into one of those two categories. The pioneers are that small fraction of people that are willing to move ahead even when they don't know what's out there and kind of pave the way for others. But then probably 9 out of 10 of us would be what I call a settler. We move ahead only when we know it's safe. But I believe in the world that's coming. If we're a parent, an educator, an employer, a coach, we're going to need to move more into the pioneer mode because our kids are going to need people with timeless values, with a compass, if you will, that can say, I can tell you where true north is wherever you go. And I even talk about the GPS or the compass in the book. Most of us are GPSing our kids. Turn left, turn right, turn left, turn right. Don't forget your backpack. Don't forget the quiz on Friday. You know, don't forget your coat. When really what we need to do is get them a compass and say, I will show you how to make a good decision, even if you're in territory you've never been in before. Here's true north. And we're better at GPSing. But GPS, Neil, you know, only works if you've got the street address. You know, yeah. We don't have the street address for 2035. So that's what I'm pushing for in the book there.
Oh, well, I mean, in general, we've got all sorts of parenting books. I mean, you've written a bunch on parenting. Are we less effective maybe today than parenting a previous generation?
Wow, that's a great question. Let me try to give you a wise answer. Okay. I think in many ways we are more engaged than ever. I think there's not only a new generation of kids today, there's a whole new generation of parents that really care. Probably your listeners are listening because they care. The downside is I believe we can either overfunction as parents, you know, where we're doing too much for our children, wanting to make sure they get all the perks and breaks they deserve as adults, or I think sometimes we continue patterns that worked in the past, and we're not even ready to have the conversation that our kids need us to have today. Can I illustrate real quick?
Yeah.
This last spring, I was in Europe. In fact, we were celebrating two graduations in our family. So we took a family vacation to London and Paris. It was really fun. But while I was over there, I was stunned to begin to read about some of the things that were going on in Europe that I believe we're going to face in about 5 to 10 years in America. One of them is this. Artificial intelligence is moving forward at such a rapid pace that there are some cafes in Europe now that you can go in as a man, you and I as a man, can walk into this cafe and be served by a robot. But I'm not talking about just any robot. I'm not talking about Rosie on the Jetsons, you know. I'm talking about a beautiful female-looking, runway model-looking robot. And you can be served a coffee and a sexual favor by this robot. And so the argument taking place over there, Neil, was, well, this might be good for marriages because the men will have their needs met through a robot. And some people, no, that's bad for marriages. That will, you know, intimacy through a robot, that's not good. I'm thinking to myself, we're not even ready to have that conversation. But it's coming, and I think it's coming more rapidly than we realize. And we're still parenting as if we're in the 20th century, just trying to hold firmly to something we had in the past when really what we need, like I just said, is a compass that will work in the 21st century and still help them find their way.
One of the other key areas which you spend a lot of time working is in education and the coaching and mentoring. But education traditionally has been the way that we develop those life skills and maturity. What's maybe not working as well as it should in education, or how does it need to change for the 21st century?
Yeah, great point. Well, first of all, I would argue, and I think most teachers would agree, teachers are my heroes. I love educators. Most would agree we need to find ways where we're more experiential, more participatory, rather than the lecture, drill, test model. Neil, if you look at our current public school system in America, full of great people, it was built for the Industrial Revolution. You know, Horace Mann was this great pioneer in 1859 that moved us from the one-room schoolhouse to this system we have today. But get this, he said we need to emulate where they're going to go into their careers. So most of the kids 120 years ago were going to be working in a factory. So he set up a school to work just like a factory. So they started with bells or whistles, just like a factory. Neil, I ask you, do you know any schools that are still starting with a bell? Of course you do. We continue, you know, mass production, download the content, the curriculum is all the same. So we really set it up for the Industrial Revolution. Well, now we're not in the Industrial Revolution anymore. We're moving into the information age and later the intelligence age where all of our devices are smart. I think we need to recreate schools that are getting them ready for the 21st century, for the year 2025, not 1925. And I don't say that as an insult to any principal or teacher or dean. I think you would agree. We've got to somehow reinvent how we get kids ready to be adults.
I learned a new word, metacognition. I probably should have known that, but yeah. So just explain what. I jokingly wrote the question. What do you think about metacognition? So say more about that.
So I have a whole chapter on that one. This is a term that's actually sweeping the educational world by storm. Started at Harvard, or at least became popular at Harvard. Metacognition is simply defined as thinking about your thinking. So when you use metacognition, and a teacher always does, by the way, you're reflecting on how did I learn this subject that I'm about to communicate? What steps did I need to take to learn it? How do I communicate it? How do I practice it? The sad truth is most of the metacognition taking places in classes today are taking part by the teacher, not the students. I'm thinking we need to help students do the metacognition. So instead of just downloading lesson plans and curriculum, what if we said, what problem needs to be solved in the world today? Now, I'm going to guide you, but you're going to come up with some solutions to solve that problem. Now, these are major projects, and yeah, they're going to come up with zany ideas, and they're going to say goofy things, but when a student owns their world and owns their education like that, they come up with incredibly innovative ideas. But it would be a complete turnaround on how we do teaching. It's not us, you know, transmitting information. It's us pulling out what's there. We're more pullers. We're more consultants, not creators. You follow what I'm saying? Yeah. We're really pulling more out of the student than we are getting stuff to the student and actually sometimes putting them to sleep because it's only us that are active in the classroom.
Well, I was just wondering if that, you know, squares with studies about brain development that are, you know, brains aren't fully developed till they're in their 20s. So, you know, are we asking students to, you know, create and think about things that they haven't really, you know, aren't capable of thinking of?
Well, absolutely. In fact, you're right. The brain, especially the male brain, isn't really fully developed until 25. And so we do need to be aware of that. And there are going to be some perhaps emotional issues that they're not fully ready to tackle at 15 or 16. However, Neil, when I look back in history, and we may have touched on this the last time I was on your program, when I look back 100 years ago and look at how children grew up, first of all, the term adolescence was just coined, you know, 100 years ago. Secondly, kids were doing way more 100 years ago. 4-year-olds were doing chores around the house. 14-year-olds were driving cars. 17-year-olds were leading armies in World War I. 19-year-olds were getting married and having children. And I'm not suggesting we need to go back and do it again that way. I'm just saying it's in our kids to be so much more than people that get lost on Instagram. You know, we just have expected them to do less. And I really think if we expect more, they may give us more. They may come up with the next idea that cures cancer. You know, who knows? So I really am pushing for let's challenge our kids and expect the best of them, not say, kids today, they're just lazy bums or whatever. And I think we sometimes default to that too often because they're not like us.
Talking today with Dr. Tim Elmore, president of Growing Leaders. He's a best-selling author and a speaker. And we're talking about the next generation and training up our kids, inspiring students to navigate a brand new world, the subtitle of his new book called Marching Off the Map. And we're going to talk more about how we do that, how we can better inspire and equip our students. We'll learn a little bit from Dr. Seuss as well, all coming up in a moment here on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith. And we're glad to have connected with Dr. Tim Elmore, president of Growing Leaders. It's an organization that works with parents, with educators, with coaches, mentors. Dr. Elmore has developed a bunch of curriculum and training systems that combine images, relatable stories and experiences into leadership lesson plans. And he is talking to us today about his new book called Marching Off the Map. And that one of the things you talk about in the book, Tim, is that we can learn a lesson or two from Dr. Seuss. Let's start there.
Yeah, I open a chapter with a really fun and amazing story about Dr. Seuss. When he wrote Green Eggs and Ham, and actually a few other books, it was off of a bet. He was challenged by a publisher. Could he write a book in 300 words or less? So, in other words, he doesn't use more than 300 words. So he took the bet. And he writes these books that have now sold millions of copies. Everybody seems to know Dr. Seuss. And we love Green Eggs and Ham and The Cat in the Hat and Horton Hears a Who. But what we often don't know is the challenge that he took was to make his words fewer, unique, and simple. And I think even though our kids are more intelligent and more educated than ever, maybe the message that gets through is the one where we use fewer words. Do you hear me, Mom and Dad out there? Fewer words. Make sure the idea is simple to understand. Maybe it's hard to do, but simple to understand. And the words are unique. We don't keep saying the same thing over and over again. But, boy, Dr. Seuss had zany things to say, you know, and to think that I learned it on Mulberry Street, you know, that sort of thing. So that's what I argue for there is how do we get through to the next generation that's on a screen all the time? But I might point out that has the same level of anxiety that a psychiatric patient did in the 1950s. That's what just concerns me so deeply, that the average adolescent today has that level of angst in their life. And I don't think we realize the stress they're experiencing and how to lead them through that.
In fact, you talk about three A's. You mentioned anxiety, but yeah. There are a couple others that really represent hurdles for today's generation.
Yeah, I'll share this with you real quick. I do. So my three A's were anxiety, so the high levels of anxiety among students today. Addiction. It seems that just addictions have become normal. In fact, when we did focus groups for the book, all the kids, without an exception, said, oh, yeah, I've got addictions. I'm addicted, you know, to meds, to phones, to this, to that. And they're not all illegal drugs, but we just are used to something helps me get through the day. And I just don't know if that's what our Creator intended us, that I need something to get me through the day. And then my last one was all moralism. So we're trending, if you look at the data, toward there isn't a real right and wrong. It's what you feel like it is. And I realize that's been said now for a few decades, but let me just illustrate. Research has come out of the University of Notre Dame, great school up in South Bend, Indiana. And Christian Smith, the author, the professor that authored the book, said three out of every four college students in America admit to cheating to get through college. Not one out of 10, three out of four. Two out of every three young adults, ages 16 to 24, believe there is no real right and wrong. There's no black and white truth anymore. Well, while I do believe some things are gray, for sure, I believe there are still some black and white issues that if we leave them, we leave them at our peril. And so I fear that in the name of we got to stay current, we just make everything gray. And I believe we still need a true north to guide us into the future. And I'm not talking about grandpa's lifestyle back, you know, 1920. I'm just saying we got to know what those handful of values are that guide us into the future and help us to be ethical, moral people.
And, of course, as, you know, Christians, that alarms us, I guess. And,
yeah.
and we
yeah.
think maybe we'll just double down and do more kind of controlling and imposing and informing.
Yeah.
And though yeah. that's just not the way that we can lead today, is it?
No, it's not. Let me offer a couple of helpful thoughts. I talk in the book about don't think control, think connect. You know, whenever something seems to be going awry, we adults want to just seize control. You know, I'm the dad and I seize control of the house or whatever. I think control is a myth. I don't truly have control of the teenager's attitude, but I can seek connection with that teenager. And if I connect with them at the heart level and I listen and empathize, and I know these are age-old virtues, but if I practice what I have preached and I really connect with them, I don't control them, but I do gain a deep level of influence. Another thing I argue for is don't think rules, think equations. So, you know, we just keep adding more rules. I think when our kids grow older and become teenagers, we just add more rules. Be in a 10, give up your phone, you know, whatever. I think what prepares them for the future, Neil, is equations. Now, we all know what an equation is. An equation is, well, if you do that, this is the benefit. If you do this, that's the consequence. That's how life works. Try not paying your mortgage this month. You're going to get an equation from the bank. So I think if we introduce equations at the level of our children, you know, if they're seven, it's a seven-year-old equation. but we stick to them. If they don't do something, there's a consequence. And we don't give in. We say, oh, that's, you made a bad equation there, Josh or Jessica. I think that really conditions them for the world that they're going to go into as grown-ups. There's nothing more pitiful than a grown adult, 28 years old, who still doesn't learn that life is full of equations, and we haven't prepared him for that world. So I'll get off my soapbox there, but I really think we've got to do it a new way in this day we live in today.
Marching Off the Map is the book we're referencing, and the reality is that, you know, the 2035 or whatever, you know, the future ahead of us is not going to be the same as it was a generation ago. You talked about those three A's, anxiety, addiction, and immoralism, but I guess I wonder, is there another one that we should talk about, is apathy? I mean, sometimes we see that maybe among students, or maybe we assume that there's apathy, but it's just that we're not approaching it the right way.
Well, I think it's a little of both. There clearly are apathetic teens in every generation, including mine, by the way.
Yeah.
But I do think if there's a rise in apathy, I actually attribute that to the volume of options that exist today. Think about it. When you and I were growing up, you know, there were a handful of things you could choose to do if you had this talent. Today, there's 1,000 things you can do. So I think if they get stuck or apathetic, it's not because they don't have a vision. I think it's because they have too many visions on what they want to do. So I love Herbert Simon's quote. Herbert Simon said, "A wealth of information creates a poverty of attention." I love that. In other words, if I got so much information coming at me, I don't pay attention to any one thing very long. You know, I move on to the next thing after 6 seconds. And by the way, that's the attention span of a Gen Z kid, 6 seconds. So I feel like we've got to say, I can engage these kids, but I want to help them focus. I'm going to use one of our habitudes now, be a river, not a flood. You know, a river's flowing in one direction, a flood's flowing in every direction. Then we can engage them. And I do know educators that are engaging kids today. They're doing a great job at leading them into a single vision, not 17 visions.
I know you work a lot with schools, educators. Maybe just give an example of some favorite innovations that are going on today.
Okay, I'll give you a couple real quick. One man that would consider himself a very ordinary person is Jeffrey Knight. Jeffrey Knight teaches high school kids in Louisville, Kentucky, and he teaches science, so he teaches chemistry and biology and so forth. But he makes his class experiential. In fact, he's what I call an epic teacher, EPIC. Len Sweet taught me this. He's experiential, participatory, image-rich, and connected to his kids. So they have experiences, and those experiences guide the discussions rather than a lecture and then a little experiment. And what he does best is relationship. So this is an age-old truth. These kids today that are better on screens perhaps than face-to-face need face-to-face connections with adults. Even if we have to force it sometimes, we need to have meals together. We need to get with them and talk face-to-face and read body language and teach them to have high emotional intelligence. So Jeffrey Knight does relationships well and does experiential learning well. But then there's another great school that might be good to for listeners to look into. It's called High Tech High. It's High Tech High School in San Diego, California. So this school was brought about because a couple of people, people that would consider themselves very ordinary, said, we're not engaging high schoolers today very well. Let's help them find their talent, find what their interests are, and then find out what the world needs. And then get those three things together. What am I good at doing? What do I like doing? And what does the world need? And High Tech High is a very project-based learning school that tries to solve real-world problems, not hypothetical problems. And the kids are engaged there. Well, I would be too. You would be too, Neil, because you get to do stuff that you really are interested in and might build a career off of. So I really do believe, and we cite some of these in the Marching Off the Map book. We have a whole chapter of modern-day map makers. And it's just I believe there's people that are showing us you can do it today in our current system if you just tweak the way you think. So that's what I'm arguing for.
You'll find great resources and information available in the book, Marching Off the Map. It's from Dr. Tim Elmore. Tim is president of Growing Leaders and best-selling author and speaker, and using his expertise on Generations Y and Z to equip educators, coaches, leaders, parents, and other adults to impart practical life and leadership skills to young adults that will help them navigate through life. And we're going to take another segment to talk just a bit more about that. Maybe if there's a unique role for the church to play in helping chart a new course as well. We'll get to that all in the moments ahead here on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Dr. Tim Elmore is my guest today, talking about his new book, Marching Off the Map, Inspire Students to Navigate a Brave New World, a Brand New World. And, well, it will be a brave new world as well. You know, we don't know what tomorrow holds, but we want to be effective in helping to coach and mentor our students along today. It seems like maybe before we talk about, I know you suggest there's several, opportunities that we have, but we probably should say a word about technology and social media, because there is that is so dominant, and there is a price that comes with that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So one of the diagrams I have in the book is called The Price of Social Media, and it's two columns. So if the listeners can imagine two columns real quick, I won't go through all these, but I take the word price, P-R-I-C-E, and I talk about the fact that those five letters remind me of five realities that social media offers us. So the letter P is a personal platform. We all know that if I'm getting on social media, I get a personal platform. The letter R is reactionary opinions. We all know that you get on Twitter, you can react to each other and share your opinion in a knee-jerk sort of way. Instant updates is the letter I. But then I show off to the right the unintended consequences of those realities, perhaps what we did not see coming. And, Neil, it is a little scary. I'll be very honest. I'm you and I are both educated people, but if you have a personal platform and you begin to really give attention to that, as many teens do today, it actually creates a narcissistic tendency. And I'm not blaming kids. They didn't invent social media. We did. But they're taking 25,000 selfies in a lifetime. Now, that's what they say. The young adult today will take 25,000 selfies in an average lifetime. So I'm into myself rather than perhaps seeing the big picture of what life is really about, that I'm a part of the puzzle, but I'm not the puzzle. That's a huge lesson. We're going to have to be more intentional at teaching. Reactionary opinions, I mentioned that one. Well, this has created in our teenagers two things. One, I'm impulsive because I'm able to react, to anything that happens without really even thinking. I can just emotionally react. But then secondly, Neil, we didn't see this coming. It's causing a middle school and a high school kid to be completely obsessed with what others think of me. So if I'm always getting people's reactions, their likes, their shares, their views, their retweets, or their lack thereof, my self-esteem may go up and down completely based on whether my buddies liked what I'm saying or not, or doing or not. So this is just concerning, because I believe as a child is growing older, self-esteem and our sense of identity needs to be forming in a healthy way. It shouldn't just be built off of, do I have American Eagle pants and Lucky Brand jeans or, whatever. So we've got to help them build that, and I think social media is actually bringing a challenge with it, not just a blessing with it. And so I talk about how do we navigate that in the book so that the kids see a broader perspective than just that screen in front of their eyes.
And, of course, even taken to the extreme, we can think about the influence of social media on, terrorist groups, recruiting ISIS, for example. I mean, we do need to take this seriously.
Absolutely. In fact, I did some digging before I wrote that chapter. I'm just amazed at how ISIS and other terrorist groups around the world have capitalized on social media. And they're recruiting young adults, mostly guys, but not all guys, to be a part of it. And sometimes, Neil, if you're like me, you look at the news and you see somebody that got involved with ISIS and you go, why in the world would you do that? But they're asking them to become a part of something that's very big and in their eyes very meaningful. They're righting wrongs, they think. And I'm telling you, church, if we're not doing this, that's our unpaid bills. That's our fault. We should be calling these young adults and these teenagers to something crazy important. And it's not just hypothetical or plastic or artificial. We're letting them serve on mission teams, and we're calling them to do something in the community. And it actually matters. It's not just, I've already said it, but it's not just artificial. You know, I think we're so afraid that they're going to do something unsafe. We give them artificial things to do. And I think our kids are going, give me something that matters to do. And that's our role, I believe. Yeah.
In fact, that's the subtitle of the book. The first word is inspire, and I know that's one of your key solutions, right, really at the heart of your work in ministry over the years, right? It's about inspiration.
Absolutely, yeah. And we have been leaning heavily on information. I don't know if you'd agree with that, Neil, but we're really good at informing the next generation. You need to know this. You need to know that. Well, information has rarely been motivating. But I believe we can inspire by first modeling the way. I know that sounds like an age-old concept. It is. But I'm living the life I'm going to ask you to live, son or daughter. Secondly, though, I expose them to people and experiences that do inspire. For instance, when both of my kids were 5 years old, I don't think I'm a brilliant dad, but I had them on overseas mission trips. Was it a little scary? A little bit, yeah. But my daughter and son had a passport at five. And we were going over, when my daughter was five, we were going over to Croatia to serve refugees at a refugee camp in Croatia. You know, the Bosnia-Serbia war, people were coming over. And we handed out food and blankets and toys to the children. And, I mean, it was incredibly amazing. My daughter still remembers it. And it's given her a bias for empathy toward others and the underserved populations of our world. But that didn't come from a lecture at dinner time from dad. That came from an experience. So I don't know if you want to go further. We could go further, but I'll stop there. I think we need to be a little bit more creative. We need to have great dinner time conversations about things that we believe our kids need to learn. And we taught with images in our house, Neil. So these habitudes that you've heard me mention, we teach with images because that's their love language. You know, they're on screens. They're screenagers. So rivers and floods, I mentioned before. The iceberg we use as a way of teaching the power of character. The 10% above the waterline is my skill because you can see it. But the 90% beneath the surface, just like in an iceberg, that represents my character. And it's always what's beneath the surface that sinks the ship. So we talk up to our kids that you're probably never going to get permanently derailed with a technique flaw, but you might get derailed with a moral decision that you make or fail to make. And so your influence lies in qualities beneath the surface. But that's taught visually. So experiential, visual, conversational learning is really what they're asking for. And if I were honest, I think it's what I was asking for when I was 16. Or 11, and we just need to actually do it today because we're braving a whole new world, and they're going to demand it of us, or they're going to get it somewhere else on YouTube, and we'll be left in the dust.
You know, we've been talking a lot about how to prepare our kids for the future, but the reality is that I guess everybody has kind of basic emotional needs, and I mean kids. Have the same needs maybe today, emotionally as we did in our generation. Let's just review that. I mean, ultimately we want to, show love and care for our kids, but in the right way.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So the remaining, the timeless values they need from us, they do need relationship. Baby boomers who have commonly, and by the way, I am one, so I can say this, commonly been known to just throw money at problems rather than actually spend time with the child. Here's a new iPhone or whatever. I think we need to spend the time with our children. I don't think you can make up for that any other way. Not money, not possessions. We need to spend time. We need to model ethics. I'll never forget, and I get a little teary when I tell this story, but I'll never forget my wife telling me, just sidebar conversations, how she was out at the grocery store when her kids were younger, and she'd get to the car with her bags of groceries, and then she noticed she accidentally got a can of green beans that wasn't hers. It was an extra can of green beans. And she said, I knew I could have just kept it. It wasn't a big deal. We were late. We needed to get going. But she marched it back in with her children, and our kids watched their mother return the can of green beans. and they have an indelibly etched picture of an adult saying, this was not right, and I need to give this back to you. And again, I guess I get emotional because I'm just saying, I think we're lecturing this well. I don't think we're modeling this well. And we've just got to get back to the fundamentals of let's live our lives well so that this next generation can do it as well.
Tim, before we go, you mentioned Habitudes. That's part of your work at Growing Leaders. Say a little bit more about that and where we can find more information.
Yeah, this has been a very sticky way to teach truth. Habitudes are simply images that form leadership habits and attitudes. So it's just a fun way to teach a timeless principle with the power of a picture. So I mentioned a couple of already, but haven't we said for years pictures are worth a thousand words? So I bring up an image, and it represents something. So we start talking about it. Now we're all engaged, everybody at the dinner table or the classroom. And then now that conversation leads to an experience. Now we're saying, what should we do about this? And so it's I call it put your leadership on ice. Start with an image, that's the letter I, which leads to a conversation, which leads to an experience, which is what I think changes our life. So there are schools that are using this in advisement period or homeroom. There's college athletic departments that are using it with their athletes. And we did it in our home at dinner time. But we have 108 of these images, Neil, and they're definitely available. They're not expensive at all. We have them in books and videos. But you can go to growingleaders.com to find these habitudes. Growingleaders.com, and then you can, whether it's whatever environment you're in, you can utilize them to start some great conversations about truths that we think are timeless.
And whether it's just in the home or if you're a coach or a Sunday school teacher, it seems like these would all be great resources to help us prepare our and inspire students to navigate a brave new world, because it's coming.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Tim, are you ultimately still encouraged about the next generation? I mean, we can, we're both in that generation.
Yeah.
Go, well, it's, you know, it's not like when I was a kid, but are you confident?
I am encouraged, but I say that with one caveat. If we do what we've just talked about, Neil, I think we're going to have to adapt, not adopt, everything that's coming. So I talk about that in the book. If I adopt everything that's coming my way, I'm just going to be up and down like that, you know, Space Mountain at Disney World. I don't need to adopt every new thing that comes along, but I do need to adapt, meaning I may need to adapt the way I lead these kids, because they are on screens today more than they were 30 years ago. So I talk about adapting, and it's a little bit like adjusting the sails. If you're out as a sailor on a windy day in a boat, you could throw up your fist and say, well, the wind's just not cooperating today, so forget it. Just forget the whole thing. Or you can just sit down and say, I surrender. Or you can say, nope, I'm going to adjust the sails. The wind's not blowing the way I wanted it, but I'm going to leverage whatever this wind is doing to take this boat where it needs to go. That's what we need to do as adults. We can be encouraged. We're going to get to where we need to go if we adjust those sails and adapt our leadership style so that it takes these kids that are so smart and so gifted, just as much as any generation in the past, but they're intuitive about a new world that we're not intuitive about. And I think we get mad instead of getting busy. And I say, let's don't get mad, let's get busy.
Good words from Dr. Tim Elmore. Tim is president of Growing Leaders. Find out more on the website growingleaders.com. And you mentioned the Habitudes. You can look for those there as well. Tim has authored more than 30 books. His latest is called Marching Off the Map, Inspire Students to Navigate a Brave New World. And Tim, so glad to have the opportunity to talk with you today. Thank you for sharing your time and your insight and your encouragement to us today.
Well, Neil, I'm honored to be with you. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much for tuning into Connecting Faith today. If you missed part of today's conversation with Dr. Tim Elmore, you can find it. We post those interviews on our show page, the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. That's Connecting Faith at myfaithradio.com. And Ted, likes to say welcome to new listeners to Faith Radio.
That's right.
We do have a welcome packet for them.
A free one.
Yeah, it doesn't include a map in it. So we were talking about marching off a map.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You can check that out. Actually, sign up for one. It's a great resource, and it'll tell you a bit more about Faith Radio if you're new to us. So check that out on myfaithradio.com. Tomorrow, we're talking with Kelly Rosati here on Faith Radio. You won't want to miss it. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. But these conversations are available because of listener support. And you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.